Jay Rob, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Another exciting day.
I'm excited to see you. Thank you so much for accepting my invitation. We actually met on Instagram, or I reached out to you, or someone on your team. I don't know if I was actually talking to you or someone else, but really been a big fan of yours and your protein. I can't remember how I first learned about J-Rob protein, but I lived in Beaumont, Texas for about eight and a half years. And I've been using protein shakes and powders for a number of years and found yours and really enjoyed it. So something that always stood out to me is that you had a message on the back of the package pertaining to God. And that always stood out to me as well. So thank you for the great supplements and thank you for being on the show.
Oh, I'm glad to do it. It's hard to believe I was back in 88 when I started the company and put that powder together. And I always kept and my message, I always wanted to make sure that, you know, I was promoting health and wellness and all that and fitness and bodybuilding and stuff. But I wanted to make sure that the message behind it all was always to point people into the direction of God, to turn them inward instead of outward to the world. And so,
yeah,
that was what really sparked me to drive the company, you know, upward.
And yeah,
God bless us every step of the way. I have no complaints over all the years. It just was an unbelievable vertical ride. It still is.
I know. Yeah. Well, I got so many questions. Tell us, take us back to 1990 or 1988. How'd you get on this path of supplements and exercise and nutrition and then eventually having your own company?
Gee, well, my fitness began, believe it or not. Well, actually, I was a swimmer and diver when I was a kid. So I kind of get introduced to health, fitness, sunshine, and stuff like that. So at 7 years of age, I started swimming on a swim team. Loved it. And in this is going to date me here a little bit, but in 1966, I got my first weight session. I can see your head. You're doing the math already. Wait a minute. This is right. So anyway, 1966, I was 13. I'll give it away. My first weight set. And that was the best gift I think I've ever gotten. And I said, I don't want to be a skinny little 13-year-old kid beat up all the time anymore, you know. And so I just I took to the weights. But I just dabbled in them, not wholeheartedly, but I loved them. I just loved the feel of them, you know, just pumping iron. And it just felt good. But it wasn't all the way up until 1975 that I just dove headfirst into bodybuilding and fitness, because I'd watched Arnold, you know, a lot of the earlier bodybuilders who were, you know, making it big, and they were big, and steroids had come out. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but steroids were just huge. And these guys just got big, and they weren't that big. It seemed like a decade before, but now they were huge, but it just looked glamorous. And so I just jumped in. And 5 years later, I opened my first fitness club, Jay's Gym.
Nice.
And just went full tilt into the fitness world and teaching. I created a small supplement line way back then, and we got people ready for contests, but we would drug test them. And so we were some of the country's first drug tested bodybuilding events. And so that kind of put us in a different map, because I got really turned off by the whole steroid scene back in the day. It was obnoxious, and people, I mean, they were juicing so heavy, you know, way back.
Oh yeah.
Not, I mean, it's even worse now, but back then they were juicing so heavy, and I saw personality changes. People just got crazy. And of course, they got huge. It'd be one day they're, you know, 180 pounds. Next time they're 280. You just go, whoa.
Oh, I know.
So that set me on the trail. But there's a twist to my story.
Yeah.
Along the way, see, back in the day, I was a hippie. Just long hair and all. I've always leaned into that ever since the Beatles came out and we grew our hair long and just loved the whole peace and love movement. Went through college during that period of time. And it was just fun and a free spirited thought. And I never had looked at life that way, because I don't know about you, but going through high school is high school. It's like who's going to beat up who and what's going to happen next, and are you going to make it through? And it gets a little weird sometimes in the midst of the fun and the craziness, and you lose the purpose or the meaning of life or what we're here for. Because I always felt like, until I got to college, that guys were just meant to just beat on other guys. It was an interesting philosophy I had in my head. So yeah. I remember getting to the campus when I went to college, and there was, I pull up and this guy comes out the front door of my dorm, and he started coming at me. And I thought, oh God, this guy's always going to want to fight the first time I just pulled up. And he goes, "Hey brother, let me help you." He says, "You need some help, man?" And his hair was long. And I thought, nobody's ever said that to me before. They didn't know me. So, That was my introduction to, oh, I like this lifestyle. I like this way of living and the way of thinking. And I just adapted to it immediately. So hair goes long, I go free and happy. And so that was in the interim of me getting into body movement. So I had that spirit as well as the physical aspect of it.
Right.
It's a double balance there. So I'm like free spirited and, but grounded with the body and health and earth and all that. And, it was a fun time. It really was, because all that stuff was new. So I just, So that was 1980. So then I sold my first fitness club and took a job at Jimbo's naturally in San Diego, as produce, and became produce manager, then became store manager. So I wanted to learn the health food industry, because I was really into the diet part of bodybuilding and fitness and stuff. Mm-hmm. Most people, they just wanted to work out and eat whatever they wanted to eat. And I said, no, it doesn't work that way. I mean, the body's like a temple, temple of the spirit. You have to nourish it, the mind and the body. So that brought me into the world of organic foods, health foods, and so on. And it was very exciting time at then too. Still living in my bus, VW bus, and still still floating around, but just having a good time in seeing more organic foods grown and really getting on a movement, which it was. Back then, there weren't very many health food stores back through the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. There was only two or three here in San Diego. So I just got on that and learned what supplements came in, what was needed. And that, I know that was a long-winded story, but I'm going to
wait. That's fine. Take your time. No, that's great.
I realized that the protein powders that they were offering in health food stores were very poor quality. They were usually a soy protein. They were very gritty. They'd usually sweeten it with sugar or something. And at the health food stores, they weren't chemicaled or anything like that. But in bodybuilding, they didn't care. So I realized there was a void. And I knew that there was milk and egg proteins that could be superior to the soy proteins that they had. So I got in my head, because I said, I want to bring health. I want to bring the bodybuilding wisdom that I've learned over all these years, which is, what it's like to be physical and so on, to the health food industry, because I saw the health food industry was not physical that much. Mm-hmm. They were in a different way. And I said, I knew this all had to be merged together. So I said, I want to put these together. So that's what got my head going. So I started doing seminars, and I wrote a book and da-da-da-da, and put together a protein powder, and personally took it store to store to store to store. It's a long story, but it was a long ride. I mean, we got
that is
talk, but it was a long ride getting the powder going and where and how, and getting it all over Los Angeles and into Star's hands and so on. But God just blessed me all the way, and I was willing to work 16 hours a day. I didn't care, just because I love what I do, just like you.
No, that's great. Now there's a lot to talk about with that. Hey, yeah, I like that. I got to get one of those. I saw your shirts too.
Oh yeah, I'll make sure I give you a little care package.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I really like the no worries shirt. But I can remember growing up, my grandparents, I would call them Granny and Pawpaw. And they drank a lot of protein shakes. Back then, Shaklee was a big protein line or something like that. So yeah, so I can remember them, you know, consuming Shaqley and things like that. But I've always been interested in fitness as well. I majored in kinesiology at the University of Illinois. And so I've always been curious, and I worked at a Goat's Gym for about 2 or 3 years when I was in college, and then got into pharmaceutical sales. But when I was in college, EAS supplements was really big with Bill Phillips. And so I was following him, and I actually got to meet him in 2017 and give a couple of talks at some of his camps. But yeah, I was a big EAS, Myoplex, all of those big, big brands and things like that. So I've always had a fascination with that as well, where there's obviously something important, not just merely with the weights, but also with nutrition too. So when I hear you tell your story though, Jay, there's a couple of other thoughts that come to my mind. One, I'm curious, what did you study in college? And two, to launch this protein line, you know, that takes a lot of perseverance and a lot of creativity and business, you know, IQ and things like that. Where did all that come from? So can you share any of those thoughts?
Oh, sure. The what's very, very important to understand is I'm an artist.
Okay.
Let's just, at the bottom line of everything I do is an art form, something. Bodybuilding was an art form to me. I was just simply sculpting the physical body. As a personal trainer for 10 years, I was sculpting other people's bodies. So as an artist, that was my major in college. Interesting story about the college. I was in my sophomore year, and the Vietnam War was going on. Again, I'm dating myself. So the Vietnam War was going on, and they had the lottery for the draft. So I was drawn. My birthday was drawn as lottery number 16, meaning I'm going. So I dropped out of school, reported to the Army draft board, whatever that had to do. And then I took my physical and my hair, you know, I got the hair long, and I go, oh boy, this is going to go now. I can't do this. And I saw cut off Elvis's hair, and I saw him, you know, I said, they can't do this. So anyway, that was all done. And 2 days before I was to report for duty, they abolished the draft. Thank God. Hallelujah. Because I guarantee you, the first thing I'd have been done was have been shipped off to Vietnam. Yeah. And my brother-in-law was over there, and he got shot. He survived, but he was in the hospital for a year. So I knew it was not pretty. War is never pretty, in my opinion. And I don't think we have any business being at war unless somebody's actually jumping on your head and beating on it. So I'm not a fan of that and sending all our boys. So I was really opposed to it. And that was a cold hippie thing. So I was so thankful that I didn't have to do that and get that. And eventually the war wound down. But that set me off from school. So that's when I got to focus on something else. And that was partying. After that, you know, the relief of that, I'm out of school. I'm broke. You know how it is. I don't know that, you know, I didn't have anybody giving me a free ride or anything. So I was just broke. I was just a starving student and an artist on top of what am I going to make when I get out? They didn't have Photoshop back in those days or anything. What am I going
to
do?
Right.
Like, do graffiti everywhere. So I didn't care. I've always had a philosophy. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I don't want to ever think about money. I don't want money to ever come into the picture. You have to as a businessman. Yes. But from the get-go, I don't ever want that to come up and go, well, you can't do that because it's too much. No, I want to do something and know that I'm going to do it from my heart. I'm going to do it and love it as long as I love it. And once that journey's ended or I'm no longer in love with what I'm doing at that time, I'm going to change. And I have no problem changing or changing that job. So I'm willing to take and do anything and live anyway because I'm not attached to, and I'm not saying this to brag, but I'm not attached to any material items because it's just a distraction to me. So it wasn't difficult for me to step into anything and try anything because I didn't, have a fear of losing anything. God had blessed me with everything I needed. You know, I had a body, it was healthy. It was giving me wisdom on how to take care of it, how to teach others, how to maintain that. And so I just,
let me interrupt for a second if I can, because I just wrote down a word. I wrote down contentment. So
wrote down what?
I wrote down contentment.
Contentment. Okay.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you, that's what it sounds like, where, and not a lot of people talk like that. I'm trying to think more about that, right? The Apostle Paul in Philippians 4 talked about in every situation, he's learned to be content. So I've often used that language, right? It's good to go to the school of contentment. That's a hard thing to learn. So what you're saying, I think, is really important, where a lot of people will stay in a job or a career or not follow their passion because, well, how are things going to work out? And you're right. You know, obviously we need money and things like that. Where did that come from for you? You know, like, when did you reach that point of, you know, I'm not going to get attached to certain things? Was that seeing what happened to your brother? Was that, you know, seeing what happened in Vietnam? You know, where did that mindset come from? Because a lot of people struggle with that, of not following their passion. And obviously there's wisdom involved, but at least giving something a shot and trying and say, you know what, I need to see if I can do this, and not being so fearful of, you know, the unknown.
Gosh, it's, for me, it started in 1972. I was in college and I watched a movie called Kung Fu.
Okay.
I don't know if, have you heard of the movie?
I don't know if I've seen it.
David Carradine started, and it was actually a pilot.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was a pilot for a TV show.
But this was the actual movie itself.
And we were in college and I had a little black and white 19-inch TV in the room, and like all the guys in the dorm, we huddled around. We were going to watch the show. And it was supposed to be about some martial arts guy or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we were watching this, and it was about a child who had been, his parents had died, and he was left alone. And there were a lot of other orphans here in China. And so they sat outside the Shaolin Temple and were quiet, hoping they could be introduced into the temple and the temple would take care of them and raise them as a Shaolin priest. That was kind of their direction. They had nowhere else to go, I guess. And this one kid who was half Chinese, half American was sitting out there, and he was accepted out of all the other kids. And he went through this whole training, and anyway, that was the basis of the show. But then eventually, not to make this too long, but his master was killed by the emperor, and he had to, you know, his expatriator had to flee China, came to America in the Old West. And it sounds bizarre, but it was a great setting. And he brought his peace and love wisdom from being a Shaolin priest to America and the Wild Wild West. But out in this movie, at the temple, I saw something I'd never seen before. The kids and the monks were sitting cross-legged on the floor with candles all around them. There were candles all the way around them, everywhere. And they had their legs crossed and their eyes closed and their hands in their lap. And they were not doing anything but just sitting there.
Mm.
Anyway, that was meditation. And I'd never seen that before. I thought, why were they doing that? Mm. What's the point of this? Why would you do nothing? And, you know, because I was still wild and crazy. We were listening to Black Sabbath, Paranoid, and back then it was just fun and silly and wild, and you never really gave it a lot of thought. But in college, things slowed down a bit, and I got a moment to think, wait a minute, this is different. And so I sat in for a moment in 5 minutes with my legs crossed on my bed one day when nobody was in my room. So I had a roommate, and I said, boy, this is uncomfortable. This is really bizarre. Why are they doing the TV? And then after the 5 minutes, I thought, that was horribly wonderful. And I realized, there's something to this. It's about being quiet. I don't know what that actually means, because, you know, I'd never really been quiet before. So that started me in the training of my mind of being quiet. I know that it's a very, my life is a very spiritual journey. My dad was we were raised Christian, and we grew up very with God and Jesus, and everything was always up front with us. We prayed at every meal, and that's a whole nother story with my dad, but that gave me a very, very good foundation. And I expanded on that with meditation, which, you know, some, I'm not sure how you believe or feel, but some will endorse or like meditation because, and others don't. I'm not sure why, but I find it's a way for me to hear God's voice. I find it's a way that if I can turn my mind off, I can hear what nobody else can hear. I can see what nobody else can see. Why? Because the mind is what cloudies the heart, the vision, the inner vision. You know, you can't hear God if you're speaking all the time. You have to be quiet. And like in the Bible said in Psalm 43:10 or whatever it is I think that's it. Be still and know that I'm God. That always resonates with me because I realized it took me a while to get accustomed to being quiet because it wasn't back. Even today, most people don't meditate. Do you meditate? Or you do? Okay.
I do, yeah.
And they think I got two heads or something when I say that, but just be quiet or go out by yourself is odd to them, especially with, you know, people got on their phones. That is what brought me to peace. And it took me 10 years to awaken. I guess that's the word I'll use, to awaken from the dream or the delusion that I was in, that I was somebody and I was different and so on. And that I really was just a drop in the ocean and a child of God. And yet with not even a separation in that, it wasn't even like there was a drop or the ocean. They were the same. So that happened in 1981. And so that set me into a completely different spiritual place at that time. A great spiritual place.
Yeah.
I can bring it in now or we can wind it later, but that's in 2018, what brought me to become the guru of peace. That was when I decided to become, I decided to actually teach what I had learned about enlightenment and the spiritual life and God and all. Until then, I don't know why. You've had a nice calling and congratulations to you and so on. I didn't feel that calling. I felt like I was still incubating, learning. I had a lot of experience to do. And because I felt I was to deliver a slightly different message, which is what I feel. And it has to be wrapped up in a beautiful package of peace and love that died out in the hippie days. And I don't think it should ever have died out. I think that needs to be revived more than ever. I don't feel like the world is spinning out of control or everything's crazy. I think the only thing spinning out of control in our world right now are people's own minds. Their minds have gotten out of control because it's easy to get programmed watching the news. It's easy to get programmed watching even TV, movies. You get subconsciously programmed, which brings you back to answering your contentment question. Is if you have peace of mind, you'll always be content. You'll always accept what's in front of you and be thankful for it, knowing that this is something I can build from. This is something I can work up from. This is something God can move my hands in a way that makes this more beautiful for other people. Because we're all here just to do one thing. We're here to serve. There's nothing more that we've come to this earth to do. We are here to serve. And if you are paying attention to everything, which is awareness, if your mind's not running wild, if you're not on your phone constantly, if you're not doing all the things you shouldn't be doing all the time, you're going to become aware of people and their pain and their suffering. And I'm sure you feel it all the time that it's just heart-wrenching sometimes. And just know that, you know, I'm not here to save them. I'm just here to point the way. I'm here to give them a tip if they need that tip. I'm here to do something that can uplift them in the moment and perhaps give them a direction. And, it all leads to God, no matter how you want to slice it, no matter how you want to name it or how you want to do it. This is a beautiful time right now, dude. As crazy as it looks, it's a beautiful time because it's a revelation.
you know, you had mentioned meditation, and that's something I'm certainly trying to work on more. There's a passage I've focused a lot on, and I've shared it as well. I think a lot of Christians or those who proclaim to be Christians don't really think about meditation, but the Apostle Paul talked about that in Philippians 4 and verse number 8, I believe, you know, where he talked about things that are good and things that are lovely and things that are right and all these kind of things. He said, dwell on these things, or that's the idea of meditate. So my meditation is a little bit different, where I'm not necessarily trying to empty everything, but really trying to fill my mind with those things that are good and those things that are from God. And so that makes a big difference. And I was talking to my wife yesterday, but it wasn't just merely what we may sometimes think about, right? Taking a vacation or whatever it may be, you know, but the connection and the way that he had it, you know, it was in the Lord. And so that actually helped me out, right? Where connecting with God and hearing from God, you know, through his word and connecting that way in prayer. So I think all of those things are important. And those are things that I teach as well. I believe that's how we hear from the Lord today, through his scriptures. And what you're saying about emptying our minds of the trash is so important and so true. I found some old documents from 2016. And I just had like a huge transformation shift that year. One of the things that I did, though, I stopped watching the news. You know, I turned it off. I did. I turned it off, and I actually stopped watching a lot of sports. I had gotten off social media. I had read Cal Newport's book, Deep Work. And, you know, but yeah, all of that makes a big difference in learning to enjoy, like what you were talking about, the silence is so important. It was interesting. I don't know if, have you ever read C.S. Lewis' book, The Screwtape Letters?
I don't know if I read that. I have read some C.S. Lewis. Yes, I do enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. So we're recording this on Saturday. Last night, my wife and I and a couple other people went out to see the play in Dallas. And it was, you know, he talks about it in the book, but he talks about Screwtape is like this demon. And one of the things they emphasize a lot about is noise. And that's what you were talking about, right? Getting comfortable in the silence. And a lot of people just are not comfortable with turn the phone off for 30 minutes or an hour, turn the news off, and just getting comfortable in the silence. So there is something to that of taking that time and really processing thoughts and meditating on those things that are good, for sure. So that takes a lot, but I think that is something that's how we can definitely tap into contentment and to see and to enjoy what we actually have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. Something that's so simple, so free, and so freeing at the same time is rarely encouraged in America. The notion of meditation, or just being quiet and alone, or taking a walk alone, or not talking, or not taking your phone, or not doing something that elicits silence, or not even silence, but not mental activity, or when the mind is moving, you're really not here now at all. There is no reality. Your mind is remembering something or dreaming something, and both of those are a dream. So if you're remembering something, you're flashing back. If you're if you're thinking about something that's going to happen tomorrow, you're really thinking of the future that doesn't exist and it never will. So you're imagining that too. Neither one are reality. It's like watching the news in your own head. So what news are you playing in your own head? Well, if you just turn the news off, now you have nothing. Now you have no distraction. You know, so it's the mind always wanting to dream. The mind creates the illusion that we are somebody. I always felt like, and this is my personal take on this, but I always felt like when Jesus went up into the high desert for 40 days and 40 nights, he went up there, and correct me if I'm wrong in how I remember this story, but he went up there and he was tempted by the devil. And the devil says, I can give you all these things, and I will give you this, and I will give you that. The devil was promising Jesus something in the future that didn't exist in the here and now, because the devil doesn't exist in the here and now, because the devil exists in your own mind. So he was chattering to Jesus, says, you know, get behind me, Satan, or I don't remember exactly. You know probably well better than I do. Get behind me, Satan, or whatever. Leave me alone, or however he said it. But what I took that as was, get out of my head, you jerk. This is a sacred space with my Father. Get out. That was what I felt that was. And I also felt like that was important for Jesus to awaken in 40 days and 40 nights of complete isolation and quiet, which I would say that would be a form of meditation, to completely realize the truth and the reality without the mind's interaction and interference with reality. And correct me if I'm wrong again, but I believe after that, he then began his teaching. Not before that, but after that. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, so the example you're talking about is in Matthew chapter 4, I believe.
You know it all. You know all about it.
And then Luke chapter 4. So yeah, Satan tempted him three times, and that's important in his ministry as well, and especially as our great high priest and one that can sympathize and understand what we're going through, that he was tempted yet without sin.
Exactly. And so,
Luke 4, that account talks about how after that, Satan, he fled or he went away until more opportune time. So my understanding of that, Jay, and I appreciate you sharing that story. Yeah, there was something very powerful with that did begin his ministry, as you said, afterwards.
Yeah, something happened.
He did begin his ministry there. You know, I would say, I don't think there's any question the devil is real, because he's communicating with him. He's talking to him. He goes away until another opportune time. But it's a great lesson for us to see how he defeated him. But yeah, 40 days and 40 nights, that's a long time. And that is interesting with some of those attacks and things like that, and offering him something that wouldn't really give him anything.
Yeah, it was offering something that he didn't have now. You can have all this. And like, it's all imaginary, futuristic garble. That's how we get tempted into doing anything. We're never tempted by, you know, the present moment, because this is here and now. But, oh, I could have this, or the fear of I could lose that. And now you've got a gaining or a losing. And the illusion is really you thinking you're somebody who's going to hold on to these things, but someday you're going to be like pushing daisies. And is it really going to matter? Is it really going to matter if you did either one of those? And if you're afraid, what are you afraid of? And as we both probably know, the greatest fear is death.
Death,
which is how we got kind of tangled up in this whole, and maybe I shouldn't open this Pandora's box, but the whole pandemic thing, because it's easy to promote fear. And I'm a marketing, I wouldn't say an expert, but I'd say I'm pretty dang good. I've been doing it for a long time. And so I understand marketing. I understand motivation of people. And fear is the greatest motivator of all. And one thing people are afraid of is public speaking and fire and different things like that. So when you get, and then the ultimate, though, is death. Suffering, then death. So if you can get a person afraid that their family or themselves or somebody they care about or love or something is going to die or so on, you've got a motivator that'll make people do things that are idiotic. And that's where we have to be very careful in life, period, because our own mind takes us down the wrong path every single time. And I equate that with, I think only Satan speaks to us and gets to us in the mind. If you turn your mind off, if you have the ability, if you've trained the mind, if you trained yourself to shut the mind off, Satan has no leverage with you. There's no entering into you. There's no way that he can speak to you, because you're in the Holy Land. You're in the silent, the bliss. You're in God's world. You're in heaven if you're quiet. If you're absolutely dead quiet, then Satan has no hooks, nowhere to go. So you can't be taken down the wrong path until you begin thinking again and daydreaming and imagining something is better than what it is right now. What could be better than it is right now? I don't really. Is this not presented to us? I mean, yes, people suffer and there's people starving. Things are going all over the world. But unless we can come to grips with it's okay the way things are right now and accept them, our own situation, and say it's okay. And then do our best. There's nothing, this is my gig here. Do your best. There's nothing more you can do. And God will bless you in all situations. And that is a total faith walk, as I'm sure you well know. It's a total faith walk that I have nothing to base this on at all, except that thank you, and thank you. And what can I do now to serve more? Whatever that is. And I'm here now to help people put the peace, love, and fun back in their life. And I think that's been lost. And I do that by teaching people how to hang loose. I'm giving back to the world as best I can. God blessed me very, very well. I worked hard. I'm not going to deny that. But God blessed me all the way through the protein powder journey for J-Rod Protein. Got it through Hollywood, got it all over the planet, 10,000 stores. We did very, very well. But I always did my seminars and ended and at some point would witness as best I could that I was here because God spoke to me when I was down and I asked him to show me how to get back up and out and moving. And if he did, I would spend the rest of my life sharing whatever secrets he gives me. That was my, because I had a time where I had like a physical collapse. I was training too hard. I was eating too much. I was doing crazy stuff. I tried steroids and stuff like that. And I just went down one day. And that scared me. And that was when I made that little bargain with the big man and said, you know, I'll do that. And I've done my best to keep that bargain from there forward. And I'm still doing that now. I think I'm just graduating now into a deeper spiritual dive where I kept it at the back burner during my seminars and protein years and my fat burning diet book and all the things I've written and so on and the TV shows and I did today. And so I've kept it at the back burner. Now I want to put it at the front burner. We need to make God first. We need to make being quiet. We need to make our spiritual life first, not something that, we'll get around to that when we get closer to retirement age or whatever. No, there is no time other than right now. It's right. Easy. Just be quiet for a moment and you'll get a taste of it and then do that again a little bit more tomorrow and a little bit more the next day. Then pretty soon you're living with awareness. You're living in love. You're hugging everybody. I have to say this right now. I have to stop just for a second. I have to say
please.
You're a good looking dude. You reek of success. I can see that God's blessed you so well. You just have a bright future. I just feel it. I can feel your heart. The moment I saw you, I thought, wow, this guy is special and God has a purpose for him. And you're doing something you love, and you know what? God's going to bless you in ways you've never imagined, ever.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Jay.
And thank you for doing a podcast. I think it's awesome. You're inspiring me. I'm going to do a podcast now.
Well, I really appreciate that. Yeah, you know, worry is, that's what's coming to my mind as I hear you speak, and you know, staying in today, that's been something I've been studying a lot more for the last year, just overcoming worry. So, you know, Jesus talks about that so much. Stay in today. You know, worry is a waste of time. It is interesting. I've gathered up a bunch of books from the 20th century, the 30s and 40s, and the same problems that we've had today are no different, you know, than they were with 100 years ago or something like that. So there is, something about, it's just different faces, different phases. And, you know, we just have to really stay in today. So
Which reminds me, in 1966, I don't know if you know Frank Zappa.
That name sounds familiar, but tell me who he was again.
Frank Zappa, he was just like a American musician artist. And he, he would do bizarre music and funny stuff like watch out, let's see, don't eat the yellow snow or something would be like one of his songs or something like that. You know, watch out where the huskies go, don't you eat that yellow snow. You know, had funny stuff like that. Anyway, in 1966, he came out with his first album called Freak Out. And that album had a song on it called Trouble Coming. No, Trouble coming every day, or trouble every day. That's what it was called. Anyway, okay. The chorus line was trouble. There's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. And it was a song about the race riots and Watts and all that in L.A. and how he was watching. He says, I'm about to get upset watching my TV from checking out the news until my eyeballs fail to see. It seems that every day is just another rotten mess. And when it's going to change, my friend, is anybody's guess. So I'm watching that. I'm waiting, hoping for the best. I think I go to praying every time I hear him saying that there's no way to delay that trouble coming every day. No way to delay that trouble coming every day. Anyway, he wrote a song that could 50 years later almost exactly describe our country at the moment. Yeah. Exactly. If I played that song, most people never even heard of it. But if I played that song for somebody now, they'd go, oh, well, I thought that was about, you know, what we just went through. And I thought, yeah, do you think things have really changed any? No. So what has to change? We have to change our own mind.
Absolutely.
That's what's going on. We can't. Absolutely. History is just going to repeat itself. So, and that song, and it's funny, all these years I've listened to that song regularly because I like it, because it reminds me of the chaos that is just inspired by nonsense. And I saw it happen in the hippie days. That was what that was really all about. I think they wanted to take the hippie movement down. And so they created the riots. They created all this chaos, Ad, because it did. I admit, I look a little different than the average person you might see out there. But I still, you know, I'm still the same bubbly, effervescent guy. I'm out there. But I realize that people don't really know how to interact with people anymore. Not that they probably ever really, in America, they were ever really good at it. I think the hippie movement brought that barrier down, so that people weren't afraid to hug. Guys weren't afraid to hug each other because it was okay. And you weren't afraid to like everybody, no matter where they came from or who they were or why they were. It was an awakening. But so I'm out there in the world, I'm thinking, boy, people are still, they're just uptight, everybody. And so I realized, well, what's really needed in this situation is that someone just to kind of say, it's okay. It's okay. You don't have to think about being a certain way at all. Just be yourself. Be natural. And when you are, it's easy to accept somebody else. And if you can look in someone else's eyes, if you can look in someone else's eyes deeply enough, if you can get to know that person that way quickly, you will see yourself. You do not see someone else. You know, looking at you, I see myself with headphones on right now. And that's, if we view life as seeing yourself as, this is your reflection, dude. look at it. This is your reflection. If you don't like it, and some people don't really like themselves or love themselves, so I can understand when they might not like what they see. So, but when the love inside is allowed to become visible, that's suppressed mentally, the mind kind of takes it and pushes it back. But when the mind gets settled, when dust settles, you know those little snow globe things, you know, the snow in them. You ever shake those up? And you set them down on a counter and you look at them. It takes a while, but within a couple of minutes, all those little flakes are down low. Well, that's just like when you be quiet, you're like a snow globe. Yeah. You shake it up, and it's always shaking. You set it down for a moment, let it settle. You don't have to do anything because it naturally stops thinking. It naturally is a snow globe. It'll just settle down. You just have to be quiet. You just have to do it. You have to dedicate your time to it. And that's not being done. So we've got our work cut out, brother. Well, I mean, we want to go out there. See, I want to get, this is one of my things. I want to get, I've gotten 60 or 55,000 of my stickers out there. They'll hang loose on the back. See that?
Hang loose, yeah.
I've got 55,000. I just ordered 10,000 more. My goal is, and this is just to remind people to hang loose. So these are all over San Diego, some in L.A., and all over Palm Beach, Florida.
Yeah.
I want to get 100 million of these out. I want to get as many people as I can to help me get these out and distribute them out and stick them everywhere because I want them to be reminded to hang loose. That's when, that way when we're out in the world, if you have us, you have to have triggers and signals to remember to do things. And if you have something like this, you can go, oh, hang loose. It's like a subconscious cue. Mm. Oh, yeah, slow down. And you might walk over to a park bench at that moment when you see that sticker and sit down and be quiet for a little bit. Get recomposed.
Right.
Get centered. Get God-centered. Yeah. You know, let God kind of talk to you. What do I do now, God? That's what you say. And then God will tell you. And then what do? You do what he says. If you don't do what he says, guess what? You're going to do like I used to do. You drive in the ditch every time. You ever driven in the ditch because you grabbed the wheel away from God and go, I got it. I'm good. Yeah.
That's what happens when we don't listen. Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll get some stickers here. And
you're probably not. I've done in my career. So.
No, I've done that plenty. I've done that plenty of times. I was running today with my dog Teddy. I was just kind of, my mind kind of went back to some things in college, and I've definitely driven into the ditch, not listening to what God has to say for sure. I want to ask you. You had mentioned something earlier, and I know we've covered a lot of territory here. I'm curious. You mentioned you're an artist.
Yes.
You like being able to have that freedom of trying different things and going after passions and things like that.
Yeah.
And you've been really successful with that. I'm curious with, like, how long did it take or has it taken for you? So, you know, you've already had your supplement company, you've done books and things like that. When different thoughts, you know, pop into your head or ideas or passions, how fast are you actually moving on those? Are you thinking about, you know, are you thinking about them for a couple of months, talking to your wife about them, putting the plan together? Like, I'm sure you're not just like, hey, today I'm just done with that, going here, or maybe you are. Walk us through, like, what does that actually look like for these different goals and things like that? 100 million stickers, that's a pretty big goal. You've had to, I'm sure, think about that and really, you know, why'd you come to that number and things like that. So how are you going through this process when you are taking these big leaps or these new adventures?
Excellent question. That's a good question that's going to make me dig a little deeper. In the past, for me, I was spontaneous. In San Diego in 40 something years, I probably lived in 30, 35 different places. I'm very spontaneous. So I can pick up and move quick. And when I started the company, I could, you know, I wanted to start my own gym. I started a fitness club or whatever it was. I would think about it and knew that was what I was going to do. I'd had the vision and knew that was what I was going to do. And I would act on it very quickly because I didn't have nobody else. I didn't have if I had a girlfriend, I wasn't married and I didn't have kids at the time or anything. Like, I could act on things just immediately. It's boom, boom, boom. Because I didn't have to think about how's this going to affect, you know, my wife, or how's this going to affect my kids or their schools, or, you know, I guess you'd call that selfish a little bit, but spontaneously selfish. So I could act really quick. And then as I got into actually living in a home instead of my bus. I actually lived in a tent for a few years by San Diego State in a hippie commune out there years way back in the day. So it was a free spirit of time. So I could think very quickly and change my mind. If I said, I don't want to live here anymore, I'm going to Hawaii. I'd just leave. So
yeah.
Over time though, with more things that accumulate around you, to not be attached to things is very tricky for people because they're stuff, and that's including people and children and so on. So there becomes an influence and a factor there. So thought processes or changes become a little slower. For the years of growing the company, I mean, we grew for 20 straight years at a 40% growth rate clip, which is extremely rapid. I went through 8 buildings till we finally got into a 4,000 square foot, 21,000 square foot, $4 million building in here in Carlsbad in North County, San Diego. It was 20 years or whatever, but we got into that, and that was big enough finally to take care of what we needed to do. So at that point in business and in life and with what I'm doing, and at the time married and a child and so on, then thought processes slowed down just slightly, but I was still very spontaneous. I think in business you have to be very quick in making a decision. And if not, it's usually not going to be a good or the right decision. If you've got to ponder things for very long and you didn't go with your gut reaction initially, it can cause problems. So I was still very quick and very spontaneous because I was pretty much, you know, I was a CEO running the show, doing everything, had 38 employees, and we were just like ripping. I mean, we were just cranking it. But I realized that if I made a decision here or there, it would affect all these employees and their families and their health care and their lives and their livelihood and where they can live and their, can they pay their mortgage? So there became a different feeling to me because I felt obligated to be very, very, very considerate of other people's lives and so on. So I always ran the company kind of that way. Now, when we got to in 2018, when I said, I can't do this anymore, I don't think I'd actually explained it that way, but to become J-Rob, that was the diet guru then, become J-Rob and the protein and the fat-burning diet and the fat-burning chef and all those things, to do that, I went semi-mainstream corporate. Most people might don't know how to do that. I went from living in my bus into, you know, three-piece, you know, designer suits, ties, cufflinks, shoes, the whole bit. I mean, driving a Mercedes instead of a VW, 68 VW bus. What that taught me, this is a slight sidebar there, but what I learned in business was that people can only imagine what you project from your image. It doesn't have to be necessarily real, but they like to see success. And so success in the minds of most people in America is not living in your bus, is not living in a tent, is not being a free spirit. It's looking successful. So I decided I'll be the same guy, drive a Mercedes and look successful because I am successful. You know, I was already a millionaire, multimillionaire, whatever. I was, and I was still, you know, schlepping around with my surfboard and my bus and kind of doing whatever. And I thought, I'm not helping people as best I can. So I'm going to up my game. And that's when I dressed everything up, dressed the company up and everything else. And by God, it worked. It was, it was like, somebody put a torch to us or something. It was just one. I'd go to a seminar before, and pull up in the bus or, you know, whatever I was doing, a VW bus, and they go, oh, hey, you know, they're happy to see me, and pull up in the Mercedes and the suit and stuff the next time. And they go, wow, looks like somebody's successful. Looks like life's been good to you. God's blessed you. Well, there was just this complete.
Right. Complete almost change. A superficial or shallow view of, well, I guess if you have all this, then it means that.
Yeah. So I realized that I said, well, I'm just going to do this experiment. As a game, I'll play the game. And darn it, the game works. But I was willing to change myself. I was willing to cut my hair really short and dress super nice and look like a doctor, look like a professional. Everything I did, everywhere I went, I ran the company that way. We all dressed up. We all dressed nice. We weren't casual. We weren't kickback. I said, why'd you kick it back? I said, because this is serious. We're here to help people. I said, so I changed my image to reach millions instead of keeping the same way I look to reach thousands or hundreds of thousands. And it worked. So we reached millions and millions of people. So I realized, this is very effective. But by the time I got to 2000, what was that, 30-something years later, 2018, I said, I don't want to do this anymore. It's really not me. I just went back to, what do I want to do? God, I mean, I asked God, I said, God, you know, I feel discord here. I'm not feeling settled. And anytime I'm never happy, I'm like, whoa, something's off here. I said, why isn't this feeling right to me? And God just said, be yourself. That he gave me no other words. It was be yourself. So I said, okay. So I didn't believe him at first. So like a week later, praying. Okay, guys, so who do you want me to be now? How do you want me? How's this going to look? Just be yourself. Okay. I don't know what that means, but okay, I'll take it. So I guess I was a little slow. I still didn't quite believe it. It took me a couple of months. I finally kept coming back to him. And he said, just be yourself. I go, okay. So I thought about it. I said, well, who am I? And I already knew who I was. I knew who I was, but I was playing a game in business, in the world, to reach more people. But I thought, gosh, I can't do this fully. I can only do this like 80% of the way because I'm not fully real. Does that make sense? It's like, I'm not telling the whole story. I'm going to tell you to be yourself and to find your dream and live your dream, and you say, well, I'll do that, but I'm going to still look this way because I think people expect that. I would say, well, I'm kind of a fake, or this is a charade. So I said, okay, so what do I like? I like hair. I like, you know, my sideburns. I like sunglasses. I like a headband. I like whatever it is. I like being free. I like wearing free clothes and puka shell necklaces, wristbands, all kinds of strange things, and music and stuff. So I thought, just be me. So I put the headband on. I still had my hair short. Put my headband on. And said, I'm going to start moving in a different direction. So I told my wife, because I run everything by her. She's way smarter than I am. I said, hey, what do you think about this idea? Put my headband on. She goes, well, that looks pretty good. I go, yeah, it's different, though. She goes, yeah, it's different. So we would test it. We would go out in public and test it. People would look at me. Hey, they would notice me more. Hey, you did it. And so then I'd test it with a red headband. And then I would go out in public and they go, whoa, you know. And so I realized I had to be careful because I didn't look like a gangbanger. Right. I had to be really careful with the headband. So I went back to the teal because it was neutral cool. And so
that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like,
so people noticed me and they remembered it because it was teal. And that's how I said, well, I'm a huge fan of branding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a brand. I am creating another brand. I have J. Rob brand. I have a few other things, but I'm creating the GOP brand, the This Guy brand. So I'm immortal. So that's a branding. So that came about with a graphic designer, and I put that together. And I said, I don't know why it worked so well, but my look and this, when we would go to, out to eat or, And Palm Beach, you got all these great places like Guanabana's. You can eat outdoors, and it's like tropical, and there's coconut palms everywhere, and you're like on vacation every day. It's insane, but you are. So I would go everywhere, and pretty soon people recognize me, and I realize, aha, this is the very most important thing. That's why I put my image on my bag of protein. Nobody else had their image on their bag of protein at the time. I was going, oh, look, what's all these shells? All these protein look the same. I think I'll put my image on the front of mine. So I did, and people go, oh, look, he's on the front. And then people go, he's on an ego trip. And my staff would even go, he's on an ego trip. Why does he want his picture on there? All he can think about is himself and so on. I said, no. I said, I want my image on there so people know that there's a person behind this and that I'm going to back up my product. And
that's a good point.
It worked. People, they liked it. I mean, yeah, sometimes people still make fun of him. Oh, who do you think he's, Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, or Colonel Sanders? they come up with all these things. I said, no, it's because I'm a real person. Well, now I'm immortal. I will be forever. You can put that sticker on anything. So that will be the new me. So I'll be like, I don't know. I forgot your question, but I think I almost kind of sort of answered it all in a roundabout
way. That's fine.
It's sure fun doing it.
Nah, it's all
this
good.
Is a fun podcast. I like this. This is great.
Yeah. I appreciate you talking and sharing. And
I like to do the spiritual side of it. I'm sorry to interrupt there just for a second. But I've been interviewed a lot over my lifetime, and people won't a lot of times go into the spiritual part of things. They won't go in because they're mainstream and they don't want to step on toes, whatever their reason is, or maybe they just don't believe that way. But I love being on podcasts. I love being on TV. I love being in the spotlight where I can and encourage to, or at least embraced if I talk about something more important or deeper or very spiritual to me. I am different, and and meditation not embraced by everybody, and enlightenment and all that stuff is, but that's what I'm here for, and I connect with everyone and love everyone and love your message and what you're doing.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I'm honored to be on your podcast today. I mean,
I really appreciate that.
You have something magical. I can't even put my finger right on it at first, but just there's something magical about you. Your face is just a glow.
Well, thank you.
It's easy to see why you're successful. It's easy to see why you're happy. It's easy to see, that you're God-centered. It just shines out of you.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, I'll tell you this too, Jay, and I've thought a lot about this too. You know, my full-time job, obviously I'm a minister and I take that very seriously. And, I've been preaching now for 15 years and I started listening to podcasts a number of years ago. And so productivity, things like that, right? How can I speed up the process with different things has been fascinating. When I worked with Pfizer Pharmaceuticals for 8 years. So I understand what you're talking about, right? With how you dress and business and connection.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a book out there called Influence the Corporate World, right? And there's science behind what we look like and how we dress and the symmetry of our faces, even like for politics and things like that. So with this podcast, and it's kind of evolved, and I appreciate everything you're telling me, it really started out of fear. I had a microphone. I had it in one of my closets for about a year. My wife and I, Nikki, we had gotten invited to do a podcast. I said, okay. And then I was like, you know what? I just need to go ahead and start this. So it's kind of shifted. But like what you're saying, for me, faith, family, fitness, food, pretty much encompasses my life. And fun, yes. And there's some other things I can put in there, right? But I've thought a lot more about this. And this is unique, too, because not everybody on the show is going to believe everything that I do. And sometimes I have some disagreements about what people may say and things like that, from a biblical perspective. But it has been interesting because that's something that I like to do. Let's have a spiritual conversation. And what you're talking about is true. A lot of people don't want to have these spiritual conversations, even if, and people can have different views and things like that, right? But can we still have a conversation and can we still talk about some of these things? And so that's something that I'm seeing even more where, faith, fitness for me, and just connecting with people, right? And just people that have had an impact on my life. So, I mean, your protein has had an impact on me, and I bought it for years and shared it with my mom. She's like, man, this is really good. And so it's always interesting. And I'm always curious, like, well, the worst thing that he can say is no, if I ask him to be on the show, but the best thing that he could say is yes. And so it's just really nice to be able, and you kind of touched on that earlier, seeing other people, connecting with other people. And a lot of people aren't doing that today, not talking, not connecting. There are going to be differences among people, but still getting to know people. And how can we bridge some of that gap? And that this podcast it's just been amazing and fun meeting so many people around the world and hopefully influencing people for good, as well. So I appreciate those kind words and you being on the show and you trying to promote good in the world. And I think that's real good. So you did answer the question, I believe. it's a process of making these big decisions. And I liked what you said even about, especially when you have a company, your decision is going to have a ripple effect for a lot of people. And that's a big weight and that's a big responsibility. And so that's
let me interject that, one thing here real quick. I for the last because this is perfect for that conversation. For the past like 15 years, I've been going back and forth on my diet because I wrote a book, The Fat Burning Diet, which was kind of a lower carb cycling thing for bodybuilding type of a diet back in 1991. It was. And so I kind of innovated that going that direction a little bit in a unique way. at the same time, I was also innovated into detoxes using a ton of fruits and vegetables that I learned to do way back in the 70s for detox programs. So I was weighing out, going back and forth, because there's a lot of push in the last few years, especially the last 10 years, especially for ketogenic diets and cutting carbs, and that we should be burning fat, we're fat burners, and so on. And I think that has a merit and a place in our world right now to do that for the people that it may benefit or work good for, that maybe has metabolic issues, Synorex, diabetes, type 2, and so on. Mm-hmm. At the same time, those diets do not alkalize the system, the cells, the fluids, the lymph, nothing, because the fruits and vegetables are so low in those diets generally. Mm-hmm. So I was back and forth doing, you know, months and months and months of keto, and then I would or a low carb cycling like I do it, and then I would do like a very high fruit intake with some vegetables and different things, lower protein and on, just maybe shakes and fruit and shakes and a salad or something like that. So I was going back and forth, like just which one is the best? And so I, talking about going back and forth in dilemma, I felt the responsibility that I stopped teaching, you know, people how to eat like 15 years ago, because I'm not really certain that what I'm teaching is the ideal, is just the best. I know how to cleanse, I know how to detox, and I know how to get people off carbs and bad carbs. I said, but I'm not sure that I'm teaching this right. And I said, I have to have a better understanding. So I spent 15 years, and it's been torture, so I'm not going to deny it, that what I've personally had to go through dietary-wise, trying things, is if it didn't work, I had to pay the price. But I would follow through with it and say, okay, I'm going to do this and that, just to see what would happen. And I'll just, as an example, I'm sure you run into people and say, oh, have you ever cut carbs? Yeah, I've done it and did it for like 4 days or a week or a month or whatever it was. But I've never run into anybody and said, hey, have you ever just eaten fruit for a week? Have you ever just not eaten other foods? You just only had fruit for a week just to detox your system? And then 99.9%, no, never done that. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
And so that kind of intrigued me. I thought, wonder why not? So, and I wonder what would happen if I did that. And so anyway, so I've been going down a very unique dietary journey, which I'll be coming out with my new book, The Hang Loose Diet. And it's going to be based on returning people back to the Garden of Eden, as I'm going to call it. I'm not sure what your diet is or so on, but we need a certain amount of protein. I said, and we need a certain amount of carbs, and we need a certain amount of fat. Where those three macronutrients come from is where I was basing all my research and all my personal experience, empirical knowledge, and so on. What are those, and how does that pan out? Well, there's a lot of people out there that are carnivore, getting good results. A lot of people in keto getting good results. But after a while, I started noticing a lot of the blogs and a lot of things were coming up with it. After a while, these aren't working very well. They weren't working well for them. So a couple of the people, and the most recent for me that I read about was Dr. Mercola. He said, you know, he brought carbs back. He was doing low carb for years. He taught it, what, I don't know, 15 years. I forgot how long he was doing it. It was a while. He says, I brought carbs back into my diet for a reason. He says, because I was doing good. He said, but I felt like I could do better. So and this was staggering to me. He brought 500 grams a day of fruit.
Of carbs?
As carbohydrate. No, and I think he might have rice or potatoes every now and then. Mostly from, that's high. I've never quite gone that high myself. But, and Dr. Paul Saladino, I don't know if you follow any of his stuff on his podcast, but he was a carnivore guy for a year and a half, and all of a sudden he said, my blood work is horrible. So he brought in 300 grams a day of fruit and meat. That was what he did. He ate fruit and meat. I'm not sure if Mercola does meat or what his protein thing is, but I prefer shakes or something. But anyway, whatever a person wants to do. It's been interesting how this has cycled through all the things I've learned and experienced. I can never get away from the fact that the more fruit I ate, this was for me personally, but I now realize other people are experiencing this too. The more fruit I ate, the better I felt. My blood pressure would be normal or lower than normal or whatever. It'd be in a great range. If it'd be higher, if I was a higher fat, I realized fat was a problem, and everybody's saying the opposite right now. Fat was the problem. You can't get it over 15% of your diet because your body really wants to burn glucose. That's the kicker right there. So it will burn fat, but only as a fallback. it'll revert back to fat burning. That's no problem. And if you're laying around, that's what it wants to do. It'll just burn fat because you don't need it. But when you need energy, when you're training, when you're pumping iron, when you're running, when you're doing something, you were out running with the dogs. You said this morning, was that it? Or yesterday or something?
Yeah, this morning, yeah.
Teddy, well, that Teddy energy comes from not burning fat unless you're ketogenic, fully ketogenic. And most people aren't, but if you are, then it really will be fat. But the performance level that your cells like is going to be at a glucose level, burning glucose. And the two fuels that are best are still glucose and fructose in that combination, about 50-50. And that's where I'm taking this, because what I've seen, and I'm starting to see the research coming into it now, which has been a little suppressed. I'm not sure why. But, it's been suppressed, maybe because it does heal people. Is when you do that, blood pressure returns to normal, aches, pains, toxic things. Everything in the body is an acid reaction. Even when you overtrain, I've done that too many times. I'm sure you have too. You just hurt. That's acid. There's nothing else. There's nothing mysterious about it. It's acid that's residing in the tissues, in your muscles, and wherever it is. So that's just rough. So when you alkalize out with the fruits, not really even vegetables, because they just don't quite cut it. They're too toxic and so on. But fruit, we're designed to eat fruits. I really think we have missed the boat in America by moving away from fruit, because it heals us. It allows the body to heal. It nourishes us. It has vitamin C. We have to have vitamin C. It has potassium. Mm-hmm. You need 4,700 milligrams of potassium a day. Mm-hmm. America gets half that. Every American, and I guarantee you, every American is about half that. So that means a 50% deficit daily for life. That's pretty low, meaning you're going to have low energy, low spark, low alkalization, low electrolytes, and pretty soon you can't run your life like that. But when you put fruit into it, you can meet that. You can get your vitamin C needs. And if you want to eat meat, eat meat. And if you want to eat any other proteins, if you want to eat eggs, fine. I use protein powder and different things, but whatever, that's fine. The things that I think have become problematic are all of these starchy type carbs in all the various forms that we can easily overeat. And so that's kind of my message, or that's what I'll be talking about.
Oh, that's good. I
wrote a book
that.
Called Fit on Fruit and a while back. But anyway, this will be kind of a resurge of it with all the new stuff of fruit is really our primary food. And that way I don't want to make labels. I don't like labeling people. You're keto, you're macrobiotic, take the label off, you know. I just say eat a fruit-based diet and let the other chips fall where they fall. Have a protein at night. Just get what you need. Make it simple, dude.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, I went vegan last year for about 4 months and saw some great results. So there's always also the challenge of lifestyle, right? Can you maintain this, you know, long-term and things like that? So I will say for me, typically most mornings I'm having a smoothie. So back in the day when I was, you know, in college, it would just be a protein shake, nothing else. But now it's a really big smoothie. So, you know, I've used other shakes in the past, but what I typically do, I'm putting in like a cup and a half of frozen blueberries, a really big portion of strawberries, pineapple. I'm kind of moving away from peanut butter. I started doing some almond butter. and recently, it was actually really good. I had J-Rob whey isolate protein, and I'll put like 16 ounces of almond milk and then the fruit with no peanut butter or anything like that. And it felt really great. And I could tell a difference, I think, with my gut as well. So my philosophy right now, it's a book by Bill Phillips, wrote a number of years ago, Eating for Life. I can go to extremes. I know a lot of people can as well. Although people aren't going to what you're saying, like eating fruit for a week. And I think that's because of what's been pushed out there. You got to have protein and you're not going to be able to do all these things. And
you're going to die.
You're going to die. And there's something so refreshing, you know, about fruit. And like yesterday, I just had an apple and I just haven't had like an apple. And I was like, I need to eat this apple. And, you know, just mixing up our foods, I think, goes a long way as well. And getting away from all of these labels where then you almost feel guilty if you do eat something, you know, that doesn't fall into, you know, vegan or keto or whatever the case may be. So, carbohydrates, they're not the enemy. But what you're talking about, the starches and the sugar, for sure. But even the sugar from fruit, people are staying away from that.
Oh, they're scared to death of sugar.
Yeah, when they should be eating it. And yeah, absolutely. So
yeah, interesting thing on that, on fruit, people don't understand this, and diabetics, you know, don't understand it either at all. They don't realize that fructose doesn't require insulin to get into your cells. So half of the sugar in fruit is fructose. And so it requires no insulin. That's why if you ever look at the glycemic indexes or glycemic loads, even better.
Yeah.
Fruit is always low, way lower than starches. Way lower.
Way lower.
And I've never heard a doctor say, fructose doesn't require insulin. So if you're diabetic, it's going to help you. So you need to eat high fructose foods, but not high fructose corn syrup because it's like death. It's so processed, it just doesn't work. And now I think it's infused with a lot of starch and tiny particles that just really irritate the system. Mm-hmm. So that's why you can't do high fructose corn syrup. But if you do fruit, this is my opinion. It's a good one. That God gave us food for a reason. And
that's right.
We have eyeballs, we have eyes, we can detect red at 300 yards on a tree. Why do we do that? Why can we detect bright yellow at 250 yards? Why? Because we're designed to find food. It has to be our basic food. What do you feed a child when they're not being weaned, but when they get to the age of 5-6 months? You usually smash up a banana, at least in America. You smash up a banana and you feed that to your child. Or we used to do this with our son. We'd put apples in a blender and blend it in applesauce and do that too. Yep. Bananas, apples. So we'd blend up fruit and give that as a supplement to breast milk. Why? Because fruit is the ideal food for humans. How did we get away from that? Well, I have my own theories. I think it goes with some of the large soft drink companies. I won't mention any names, but their initials are like Coca-Cola and Pepsi. But I don't want to just pick on them. But
yeah,
everybody's right. In that bath. I really am not here to bash any company. That's never
mind.
But there's a responsibility that has to be there. Once that was in place, we took the sugar that was in fruit. When I was a kid, fruit was the sweet. It was our treat. Eventually, that became sodas. And that, all we've done is we still have the same sweet tooth. We just moved it to cakes, pies, ice creams, and Cokes, and soft drinks, and candy bars, and even nutrition bars, and anything else that you can come up with that's sweet that is not a piece of fruit. You cannot deny that picking a banana, peeling it down, and that just looks good. And if you're running and you just had a long run, you come back, that banana is going to take care of you.
Yep.
Not a, a bar won't do that. I'm sorry, but it won't. But a banana will, maybe two or maybe three. So we have a design. So I spent 15 years now making sure that I wasn't going to mislead somebody because I thought, gosh, I don't want to turn people diabetic into worse diabetics. And so I realized that, okay, I've done my homework. I've done it. I've worked. It works on me. It works very, very well. Fruit is the ideal. I love it. I feel like it keeps me younger, more youthful. I sleep better. Everything. It's like a miracle food, and it's inexpensive, and it's everywhere. Plant it in your yard. Plant it everywhere. So I'm settled now. So I'll be teaching that philosophy, which I think is beyond a philosophy. Actually, a common sense, intuitional, and more importantly, instinctual way of eating, which is to embrace your sweet tooth. But you can only do that because of the Randall cycle. You can only do that because if you keep fats at about 15 to 20% max, some of the research is saying 30%. I think that's too close and too high to the threshold. But especially if somebody is metabolically impaired, you want to keep those fats down to about 15 to 20%. I think 15 is probably more the ideal, which is interesting because a lot of bodybuilding diets, they don't use the fruit, but a lot of them contest diets, which I used to teach and stuff like that. A lot of sports nutrition for 10 years. So the teaching was always, chicken breast and half a cup of rice and chicken breast and a small sweet potato, that you would eat this six times a day or whatever it was to get in a certain condition. I always found it was hard on me because I wasn't eating anything fresh and alive. But some people did very, very well on it. But the point is that you have to supply the glucose at some point to your cells. And if you go overshoot, you can get fat. If you undershoot, you get, you know, you then you go ketogenic, or you become emaciated looking. A lot of guys used to do, you know, I'm going to do low carb, and they get on stage and just look flat and just emaciated. They just looked awful because you have to have glycogen in your muscles, and you can store 350 grams of carbohydrate minimum in your liver and your muscles. That's a lot of carbohydrate. That's just like 15 bananas. That's unbelievable. Like 11 bowls of oatmeal. Nobody eats that much, but you can store that without getting fat. That was how I taught my fat burning diet and sport nutrition. You won't get fat on it because you can eat all those carbs. If your glycogen levels are too low, and that's just simply muscle starch and liver starch that can be converted into glucose or sugar and used by the body. The liver usually runs the brain and puts it into your bloodstream. The muscles pull it out and use it while you're exercising. Two different kind of actions. But that's 350 grams you can store. So if you're depleted on that, you could carb load for 3 days and not put on an ounce of fat. That's why in bodybuilding, you can compete. I don't remember in your bio.
No, I haven't.
Well, getting ready for contests is pretty insane and stupid sometimes, but it's fun. Because you see how the body works. And so you can drive carbs low and then drive them back up high. It's not for the average person, but it gives you an effect. And that effect is lean and ripped. And if you don't have the water in your veins from glucose, then you're going to look no vascular, or you're going to look flat. You're going to look weak and tired and saggy. But if you get if you can carb load up right for 2 days, which is the way I taught it, 2 days fully before you step on stage, you will look huge. And it's just water carried into the muscle, into the veins, and nothing more. It's just water. So back to the illusion. That was like bodybuilding. It was funny. I love bodybuilding. I'm just weird at the same time. There's an illusion you're always creating. This is me. And look at these abs. But you didn't tell them. I had to starve for a week and 2 weeks or 3 weeks to get to that. But look how
That's exactly right.
I feel like crap, but hey, look at that.
Right.
So the key is I want to feel good, look good, and live long. So
yes, I like that. Feel good.
Midlife.
Now that feels feel good, look good, live long. Now that's absolutely right. And there's a lot of things out there, you know, because I worked at a Goat's Gym, and there's a lot of different things people can do with steroids and things like that, and It's an amazing thing to see how we can manipulate our bodies, and, you know, even for photos and things like that. But yeah, I think the marketing has just been so big, where even when I was on this vegan diet, I was eating a lot of carbs and dropping weight. And, you know, it's just this misconception of, well, I can't have any of this. And it's not true at all. And so now let me ask you this, and we've gone over time, and I appreciate your time. I want to be respectful. Two things. When is your book coming out, and when's your podcast coming out?
My book should be out. Let's see. What is this? We're going into September 1st. I'm going to try to have everything ready by November 1st. I think I'll have the podcast up and going, though, within probably another 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
And I'm also going to be starting to shoot my videos, and I'll be teaching the hang loose diet along with my hang loose lifestyle. And I'll have my hang loose manual and my hang loose sticker.
Hang loose cup, yeah.
and all at jrob.com, by the way. But anyway, I'm going to have all those things within the next 8 weeks. So I give myself that much time. And I'll tell you a quick little story, though. In November 18th, we're going to be shooting the music video, which is really what I love doing now, is making music. I'm having a blast. So I have a new song out for my second album, and we'll be shooting that video on November 18th. At the same time, I'm getting a 74 VW bus that similar to the buses I used to live in back in the day. They were usually a little even older than that. Completely redone. You know, putting the new shoes and socks. It's going to be dropped. It's going to be. I don't know how low I'm going to get it. I'm not going to slam it, but it's going to be a ride. And I also put a Tesla style motor into it.
Wow.
So we've got an electric VW retro ride that I'm going to be cruising up and down the coastline on both coasts. And I call it the magic bus because it is magical. And it's going to be set up and ready. So we'll be shooting a lot more videos. I've kind of, not recluse, but I just stepped back from the spotlight for quite a few years, like the last probably 10 years, and just been in and out lightly with it simply because I'm preparing to come forward as the GOP. And I wanted to make sure I was very, very clear on my, you talk about making a decision how is that affected over time? That's like a 5-year time period of really sifting. I really had to like pour things in and sift out. Who is the GOP? What's his message? You know, and how will he present that? How is he going to solve problems? How is he going to help people? What's he going to do? You know, it's easy when you're a diet guru. You go, hey, you know, I can show you how to lose weight. And I can show you how to lose weight. It's so easy. It's ridiculous. I said, you don't even have to work out hard. I can show you how to lose weight and keep your muscle. It was no mystery to me. The question was, would they do it? And that was usually no, but at least 20% would follow through. So that's how you perpetuate that forward. So I wanted to make sure that the GOP bringing a message of, you know, peace, love, and hope, and especially putting the peace, love, and fun back in somebody's life. So I sort of shifted it all down to, I'm here to teach people or to remind people, not even to teach. I don't even want to be a teacher like that. I'm here to remind people to hang loose. It's okay. That's my message. And if you will hang loose, it will put the peace, love, and fun back in your life. And if you will be quiet, you will hear God, and God will direct you every step of your way, every step. Yes. And Benjamin, you're just doing, do you go by Ben or Benjamin?
Either one's fine. Benjamin's fine.
Okay. So Benjamin, you know, I like that. It seems more appropriate for you. So you're doing something so, so valuable, so needed, that people want it and they need it. That's very important.
Yeah. Jay, I really appreciate this. I think you and I could probably talk for 5 hours, and I'd love to talk to you again, even if it's not on a podcast. I'd love to talk to you again and stay connected to you. And I'll be praying for you and your family. And thank you for this time. And thank you for your encouragement to me. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on your podcast. It's truly my honor to be on your podcast and to be able to share things that are heartfelt to me to join with you.
Yes.
And, trying to do our best to do God's work and to make a difference in this world in a positive way.
Yes.
The world always needs that balance of positive, because there's always the evil and the good, and the, you know, mm-hmm. you got to keep that in balance. And so, as far as I'm concerned, we've been friends forever before I even knew you. So we're friends now. Love you like a brother.
I love you too.
I don't know what it was. You saw your physical. It's my brother. mi hermano siempre. So we are really gonna rock the Casbah here together. As we so we're gonna be buds for life. And if you want me back on your podcast to be rambling on and jibber jabbering, I'll be happy to do it anytime.
Absolutely.
And share.
Yeah.
If you just want to talk sometime, I'm always available. I'm always here. So like I said,
likewise.
We are brothers.
All
we're
right.
always.